A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
What's the matter? Is everything all right? That's okay. I've got just the right thing for you. CKUT 90.3 FM.
Sarah's excited to celebrate her birthday at a restaurant. She's thought about it all week. She invited her friends. She got a new dress. She went to the restaurant. She wasn't allowed in the restaurant. She had to put away her new dress. She couldn't see her friends. And she thought about it all week.
Don't wait until it hits you. Get vaccinated. A vaccination passport is now required to enter certain public spaces. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
CKUT. On the air, live for CKUT. Oh, what? CKUT. CKUT.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CKUT 90.3 FM. Up next is an episode titled Humanizing What Disability Looks Like from the podcast Disability is Art. That's up now.
This podcast is meant to be upbeat, fun, and informative, but sometimes we touch on some triggering topics. Today's episode deals with mental illness and ableism, death or dying, sexism and misogyny.
Zoom is being recorded.
Awesome. All right, welcome back to the disability. I'm going to start that again, so I'm not touching my face like this.
COVID.
Like
I'm just have your whole fingers in your mouth.
Like I'm the Phantom of the Opera. Welcome back. The Phantom of the Opera. Okay. Welcome back to the disability. Nope.
Blake, I think you should keep all of this in.
Please don't do it.
Especially the part where she's making the voice with like the hand over her eye. That should just be the opening of the podcast.
Welcome back. Okay. Oh my gosh. Okay. You can tell this is the second one. We're getting loopier and loopier. All right, welcome back to the Disability is Art podcast. This is a podcast about art and disability here in Chibooktook, Halifax, Nova Scotia. I am your host, Kelsey McDonald, and I'm here with my co-host, Emma Mayer, who's got a different hairdo, and Truly Love. And today's podcast is going to be all about what it does to us when we accept labels. What doors does it open? What doors does it close? Which I think is an interesting conversation to have. So I think the first thing that we should touch on in terms of this topic is I think we first have to talk a little bit about digital matters. Mm-hmm. So I'll start a little bit. You guys can share your experience as well too. So Digital Matters is a program that we've been working on since, when did it start, you guys? Do you remember?
July.
Holy macaroni. So Digital Matters is a grant that we got to, it's strange because the grant, we applied for it pre-COVID. And the idea was that we would be working with youth and helping them to digitize their artworks, their art practices, and monetize their work online. And that is a great idea, and then became even more important after COVID happened and everything started taking place online, which is pretty interesting. So we were sort of like ahead of a lot of things, because we had already been thinking about how that was going to look. And mm-hmm. so we put a call out for young artists under the age of 30 who wanted to learn how to monetize their work in a very intensive program that has lasted, it's from July until December. And Truly and Emma are both the two youth that are a part of this program. And both had shown interest in having a podcast, and BAF has always been interested in having a podcast, and so it just seemed like a good fit for us to start this. But yeah, I think the reason we want to touch on that in terms of why labels matter is because in order to apply for this program, you both had to identify as artists with disability. Mm-hmm. And that can be really challenging, especially when you live with invisible disability or mental health disorders, because I think a lot of the time we don't consider those to be disabilities. I think mm-hmm. society doesn't see those as real disabilities unless it's a physical disability. And I think it can be hard within ourselves to sort of come to terms with the fact that that word applies to us and that, you know, we're allowed to use it. And like I don't want to say the word privilege to be confident enough to say that word, but it took me a very long time to be able to identify with that word and own it a little bit. And so I think it'd be interesting to talk a little bit about each of our experience in terms of owning that label of being somebody with a disability. So I think we'll go to True first, because we were talking about your anxiety disorder and how it really took you until you were hospitalized to really realize that your anxiety was more than just, oh, something that everybody deals mm-hmm. with, to being like something that really needed to be taken care of or like monitored in a way. So yeah. I'll let you speak to that a little bit.
Yeah. And it was like, honestly, like for the longest time, I didn't even think that I had anxiety. So I have, I would say, pretty bad anxiety disorder, but it's different in the way a lot of people who don't deal with anxiety would understand it, because I have almost no social anxiety. So I just have a general anxiety disorder. And because I do so well in school, because I'm like, I used to do public speaking as like a part-time job in high school, people would be like, well, you know, you don't have anxiety. Like, you don't fit the image of what mm-hmm. I think anxiety is. You just are anxious, or you're stressed out about this situation.
Or you're like, just a worrier.
Yeah, you're a worrier. I mean, I literally can remember being a child, like a very small child, and my mom used to be like, you're going to worry yourself into an ulcer. Like, that was her saying for me from like 7 up, which I come to realize is not a normal thing for parents to say about their children. But yeah, so for a long time I was like, oh yeah, like, I don't have anxiety. I'm just a stressed out person. And then, like, I would say probably towards the end of high school, maybe first year of Unity, I was like, oh, yeah, like, I have anxiety. But, like, I have really mild anxiety. Like, it doesn't affect my life that much. Fun fact, that was a lie. That was denial. And it took until, like last year, for a combination of different reasons, my anxiety, like, really hit me hard. And it got to the point where I was so stressed out that I couldn't eat. I felt like I was having a heart attack all the time. I couldn't focus. Like, normally I'm like a Dean's List student. Like, I started failing a lot of my classes, or like falling behind in my classes. Mm-hmm. And then it got to the point where I was like nauseous vomiting all the time, couldn't keep food down, like had almost no energy. I looked like death. Like, it was gross. I looked like a Tim Burton character walking around campus. And it, like, I couldn't figure out what to do, right? Because I knew what it was. Like, I knew it was anxiety. I knew I wasn't actually, mm-hmm. actually sick. But I didn't know, like, there's no one ever tells you how to deal with that kind of stuff.
Right. So, especially, like, too, I think, like, with my anxiety, people will always say, what's the cause of it? Like, I'll say, like, I'm just feeling really anxious right now. Somebody will say, why? What's causing it? What can we do? And I'm like, your guess is as good as mine. Like, I'm literally just standing in my living room doing nothing. Mm. And for some reason, my body is behaving like I'm getting chased by a bear. And sometimes I can't even pinpoint exactly what it is that I'm freaking out about. It could have literally been such a quick and passing thought. But that thought triggered something inside my body to make me feel so sick. And you're right, I feel the same way. Like, I can't, I won't eat, I won't sleep. I'll be, like, just tight. Everywhere is just so tight. And I just feel like the world's collapsing around me and I'm just standing still. And I know I should be like, run! But then I don't even know what I'm running for or where I'm going. So it just, and it can get, like, cyclical. So it can get, like, you know, you start thinking, well, what is it that I'm worrying about? So you start thinking of things mm-hmm. that it could be, yeah.
And then it makes it worse. It makes it so much worse.
Yeah. Too. And now you're worrying about 80 different things, and you're like, I just want to stop. I wish I could just
turn it off.
And so many well-meaning people would say to me, like, oh, like, why don't you just, like, go for a walk or go for a run? And I'm like, we passed that point, sweetheart. Like, we done. And it got to the point towards the end of first semester that I was essentially having a panic attack for 5 days straight.
Ooh, so, I
like,
feel that.
For people who don't know what that feels like, my chest was physically hurting, like, almost like a tightness and a pain. I don't get the shortness of breath when I have panic attacks, but that's also a common symptom of it. I was nauseous. Like, I could barely even put chapstick on my lips without feeling like I had to throw up. I couldn't keep any sort of food down. I would, like, randomly, like, start shaking from stress.
Right.
And it was to the point where I was, like, I was so weak I could hardly stand. And I would just, like, go into fits of, like, exhausted crying. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I need to do something because I don't know how to fix this. And I went to a clinic one night, a walk-in clinic for a doctor because my friend's like, please, please, please go to a doctor. And I was like, fine. This guy basically, like, diagnosed me with being a woman because he was like, I was like, it's anxiety. I have chest pains. Help me. And then he, like, looked at my ears and he's like, you don't have a cold. And I'm like, I know I don't have a cold. That's not why I'm here. And then he's like, pregnancy? And I'm like, no. Ugh. And then he proceeded to list the symptoms of pregnancy to me. And I was like, okay, no. And then he's like, but you seem like a nice girl, so I don't think that's the case. Go take a Gravol. Mm-hmm. And I was like, nah, why? And then later that night, like, I got significantly worse. And because, like, that just, you know, added to the
For
whole
sure.
situation
yeah.
of, like, oh, God, like, I feel like I'm dying and no one's going to help me.
This is my existence.
Yeah, this is my existence mm-hmm. from now on. I'm going to fail out of school and have to work at McDonald's forever, which is not the thing I want to do. And my friend's like, okay, we're going to the ER. We're going to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And apparently when you say you go with chest pains, they're like, zoom, zoom, zoom. Yeah, get things done.
Pretty quick.
A cute nurse stuck little thingies on my chest, and then they, like, stuck me in a waiting room for a bajillion different hours. And basically, like, at 1 a.m, this nurse comes in, and she's like, nothing's wrong with you. And I'm like, okay, cool, great. I know it's anxiety. Can you help me? And then she's like, are you pregnant? And I'm like, no. And then she's like, have you tried breathing? And I'm like, lady, please, I feel like I'm dying. Like, I what do you help? And she ended up, like, being like, blah, 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 let me go talk to the other doctor. Left us for a bit, came back in, and was like, yeah, I can't give you any drugs because all of the drugs we have are too addictive, which is kind of a lie. And I can't recommend anything except maybe try some breathing techniques. Because there's, like, nothing physically wrong with you. However, I do want your permission to do a pregnancy test because she straight up said, she's like, we're told not to generally believe women when they say that they aren't pregnant. Mm-hmm. So I'd like your consent for a pregnancy test. And I was just like, you know, lady, you have my consent to take one, but I'm gay. I'm not pregnant. And she's like, you know what?
They don't care.
That's a good enough answer for me.
Yeah.
But sent me home. And so I ended up getting on medication later on. But, like, it has been we're almost coming up to a year of since then. Like, this time last year, I was probably, like, either about to be hospitalized or in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a year of, like, in and out of doctors, in and out of therapy, like, trying to figure it out because I went through another fit of the exact same thing mm-hmm. in the second semester, and I basically damaged my stomach to the point of,
you,
like,
did worry yourself into an ulcer.
Yeah, I didn't quite get an ulcer, but I wrecked my stomach lining
yeah.
to the point where it was, like, essentially a feedback loop. Like, the nausea from the stress made me not want to eat, and then the not eating and the constant nausea was wrecking my stomach lining,
yeah.
which was making me more nauseous.
Yes.
And so it's just kind of been, like, all over the place, and been, like, that was, like, for me, kind of like the sole moment of, like, oh shit, like, I actually do have an anxiety disorder, and
this is debilitating
and taking over my life. And it has been for years. I've just kind of been, like,
mm-hmm.
like skating around it. Like, in first year university, my partner had a joke that I would have 5 minute little mini mental breakdowns because I would just go into, like, extreme fits
yep.
of crying and, like, plucking at my hair, and I used to be able to run my hands through my hair in the first year of university and just take like massive clumps out just from stress. But then I would like have these like little baby panic attacks and be like, I'm fine, everything's fine, and just like completely shut off my emotions. And I'm like, that's not coping. I thought it was, and it's not. Yeah. So then when I was like, when I was applying for like the Digital Matters, I got it through, like, it was pitched to us as like a youth thing through one of my queer groups. And I was cool. It was you. She got to tell me what Digital Matters was.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh shit, this is a disability organization. And I remember being like, yeah, no, like, that kind of makes sense. And like, I applied and went through. I'm like, you know what? I'll just apply. I'll let them make that choice. If they don't see me fit, they won't pick me. And then y'all picked me. And then I remember getting that email and, like, seeing at the end of, like, something to do about disability at the end of, like, Tova's, like, congratulations, you got the job letter. And I actually called my girlfriend, who I don't think was my girlfriend at the time, and was like, should I call them and tell them I can't take this? And she's like, why? And she's like, and I was like, I'm not a person living with disability. And she's like, yes, you are. Like, you've crippling anxiety, and it's, like, affects your entire life, and it's actually, like, affected your physical body to the point, like, your stomach's wrecked. And
she's written off.
You're like, she done. Like, she need a new one. And I was like, yeah, but like, I'm not like a person, like, I'm not what you think of when you think of a person who lives with disability kind of thing. Right. Like, I was like, I'm not, you know, visibly disabled. Like, what gives me the privilege to have this opportunity? Like, am I taking this spot from someone
who's more disabled and deserves it?
And then she's like, would you say that about, because like my girlfriend also struggles with like mental health disability, and she's like, would you say that about me if I was applying for this? And I'm like, no. And then she's like, well, then it doesn't apply to you. Like,
right. And so when I first came to Reachability, I came here as a client. So I was at another job. My contract was ending. They wanted to keep me but couldn't extend me. And I had worked with somebody who works here, Tara, before at NASCAD. And so when I saw Reachability, that name rang a bell to me as like, oh, okay, I know Tara works there, so it must be good. And it was like a job interview thing. It was like speed dating, but without the awkwardness was the tagline. So you basically interview with employers. You have like 5 seconds. No, 5 minutes. 5 seconds. Hello, goodbye. I liked the sound of her. She sounded great. It was like 5 minutes, and it felt like 5 seconds, though, because you really don't have a lot of time. And it was just basically like interview, and then you got up and you moved to the next table. Hi, hello, my name's Kelsey. Nice to meet you. Tell me a little bit about your business. And they tell you, and then you'd be like, cool. And I really lucked out because I interviewed with two people who worked at Reachability. And they really liked my resume and they kept it. So I came in for an interview, and one of the questions that Tova asked me during my interview was, what's your relationship with disability? And I just flat out said, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and make up a story about how I know somebody in a wheelchair. But I'll just tell you that I'm really passionate about helping people eliminate barriers. And so I just think that I'd be a really good fit here. Mm-hmm. And despite that bullshit of an answer, I managed to get the position. And while here, I have learned so much about disability that, you know, as coming from a place, my background is like, you know, I have an undergraduate degree in theater. Then I went and I did an education degree. You know, I have 2 degrees, educated. You know, I should know that disability is more than just physical disabilities, more than just someone in a wheelchair. But in my head, I couldn't comprehend that disability could be more than that one thing. And what was hilarious is that I came home and told my husband at the time, he's still my husband, why is it at the time? I told my husband, and he said, what the heck are you talking about? And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, you said no? And I said, yeah, I said no, obviously. I'm not going to lie. He was like, well, it wouldn't be a lie. He was like, I have a disability. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, I have arthritis. And every time I fill out paperwork, I say I have a disability because I do. That's a disability. And I was like, what? What? You're fine.
And you're fine.
And he was like, no, I'm not lying. I have a disability. And I was like, okay. And then he was like, what about your mom? And I was like, what do you mean my mom? My mom has ovarian cancer, and she's had ovarian cancer since I was in my last year of university. So this has been like a constant thing in our lives. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, yeah. But that's not a disability because she wasn't born with it. Mm-hmm. That's a disability. She's just got cancer. She's just sick. That's different. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, it's not different. It's a disability. And I was like, okay. And then he goes, and what about you? And I was like, what do you mean me? And he said, well, you have a disability, you have anxiety, you have depression, and you probably have ADHD, which now confirmed. And I was like, literally blew my mind in that moment. I was like, whoa, that's crazy. Because I didn't even think of ADHD or anxiety as being a part of disability. I was like, that's just somebody whose brain don't work.
Mm-hmm, totally.
That was like how I thought about it.
Yeah.
And now it's incredibly transformed my life, like, mm-hmm. completely, because now I was always really scared to be diagnosed, because for two reasons. I was scared that I was going to get diagnosed and that was going to change my whole life. And then I was scared that I would go and they would tell me, like, shocking, you don't have it, actually. You're just a piece of shit.
Yeah.
I was really scared that was going to happen. I was really scared. But yeah. It's similar to what you were saying, because, like, the reasoning, like, the reason why I'm told, like, I don't have ADHD and it's, like, I don't have it, is that, like you said, I do really well in school. I hold a job fairly.
You're a woman.
Yeah, I'm a woman, so I don't have that boy disease. And like, for the most part, people would say, and you look happy and fine. You look fine, so you must not have it.
You're not currently in an asylum, so
yeah,
you're
not
fine.
currently being locked up. And so I just always assumed, like, yeah, you're right, like, I don't have it. Maybe I am just lazy.
Mm-hmm.
But that toxic way of thinking, now I'm realizing, has been such a contributor to, like, the big sad, you know, mm-hmm. like the depression. That's what mm-hmm. we call it with my friends. The big sad. I feel mm-hmm. the big sad coming.
Mm-hmm.
And we all go, okay, let's brace ourselves for the big sad. It's coming and we'll get through it together. But I think that is, like, really challenging, and, like, especially in the way that, like, we study these disorders, like, previously, and what we're seeing now in terms of how women or, you know, people, their brains, like, the way that they're wired, like, everybody's going to exhibit different characteristics, and we can't use these studies that, like, are used to diagnose boys with ADHD because they're running around and hitting people. You know, bursts of physical energy. I still have bursts of physical energy, but it usually comes out in dancing mm-hmm. or fidgeting, which is less disruptive than, like, bah! You know?
Yeah.
And so, like, my disruptiveness or, like, my bursts of energy come out in, like, long monologues and talking. We're unfamiliar with that with me, huh?
Never experienced one of those. Experienced it.
No. So, you know, I would always get told, like, shut up, go sit over there. I'm separating you from that person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was always getting in trouble at school for talking too much. We love Kelsey. She's such a good student, but she really needs to learn when to... Still to this day, my boss is like, you know, you both have your, what's the one? This one.
The reel me in. Reel me in with the fishing
rod. Just let it happen.
Yeah. You're just on along for the ride.
Yeah.
So I think that's really interesting, like, talking about accepting that label, but also having that sense of, like, there's somebody who has it worse than me.
Well, because you kind of had the same experience, didn't you, Emma? Like, we both kind of had this conversation about...
I felt it a lot when... So you guys booked me for a show before Digital Matters, and I felt it then. I felt like, oh, I'm going to be on this disability show, but I don't know, I wouldn't really call myself disabled, but they want to be on the show, so I'll do the show. And then Mara. Every time.
It's okay. There's somebody here who works here named Tara. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare.
Tara and Mara.
It's Tara and Mara. You know what I mean? You want to say Mara and Tara. Yeah.
So Mara emailed me the Digital Matters thing. And yeah, I applied for it. And like you, I just felt like I was taking a spot from somebody who actually would need it. And I was like, I'm going to be the only one there who is, like, mentally ill. Everyone else is going to be in wheelchairs. And like, and then we go on the Zoom and it's just like not like that at all. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, Reachability does a lot of work with invisible disability and advocating for, you know, businesses and institutions to become more accessible. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, Tova has a saying that she says all the time, which is like, accessibility is more than the widening of doors. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, we talk to a lot of people and they'll say like, oh yeah, we're completely accessible. We have a button on the bathroom door. Mm-hmm. And we're like, accessibility is like more than that. Like, accessibility mm-hmm. is a mindset too, right? It's about being inclusive to who you hire. Yeah. You know, we'll talk to like to businesses and they'll say, well, nobody here has disabilities, so we're not in a rush. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't know when somebody is going to have a disability because not everybody has a disability at all times. Some people have disability, like we have a staff member here, Chris, who unfortunately just ripped his Achilles tendon, mm-hmm. but now he has a cool scooter that he scooters mm-hmm. around the office in, and it's my favorite thing. We're gonna get him some tassels, I think, for the for the edge. But yeah, like, you don't know when someone is gonna have an injury or something is going to like arise in their life that's gonna make them need to have these accessibility measures. And then on top of that, you don't know who on your staff does identify with a disability. You just can't physically see it.
I think that was a wild thing to me. You said that once when we were thinking, like, talking here as a group, like, working on the podcast and stuff. And, like, the fact of, like, I think it was, like, Tova saying of, like, everyone either has a disability, has had a disability, or will have a disability. And the thing, like, the idea that, like, a disability doesn't have to be something you're born with mm-hmm. or necessarily that's something that's permanent is wild to me. In which, like, as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, like, I have a friend who, like, slipped the discs in her back.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I noticed how really, like, incredibly inaccessible Halifax is. Like, she didn't need a wheelchair, but she couldn't do big flights of stairs.
Nope.
And so, like, we, like, really had to limit the bars we could go to.
Yeah.
Which is, like, darn. A tragedy.
A tragedy.
But, like, you know, trying to plan nights out and Sadia had to be like, hi, sorry, like, I actually can't go. There's no way, like, I can't do those stairs.
Right. Yeah.
And so it was one of those things like, oh, like, I never thought about that.
Yeah.
And, like, it's something she will, like, she fluctuates in how much she heals. And, like, it's an ongoing thing. But, like, if you had asked me at the time, like, if Sadia was a person living with a disability, I would have been like, I don't know.
Well, yeah. And, like, so disabilities can come and go. Disabilities can, you can have them from birth and they don't appear until later, or they appear infrequently, you know, like you have a bout of it and then it goes away or goes dormant. You can have disabilities that, you know, you can't see. So you don't know what someone's struggling with. And so you can't assume that people don't need accommodations because you can't see that they need them. You know, and then the other argument, which is that eventually everybody will have a disability, is like, as you get older, accessibility becomes more important to mm-hmm. your way of getting around. So if you are in a position where you can make your workplace, you can make a theater or a comedy place more accessible to the people, eventually that accessibility will benefit you. And thinking about it like that, in that I'm not doing it for these invisible people that I can't see. I'm doing it for myself in the future. When I need these things, they'll be there. Mm-hmm. And I won't have to go without. I won't have to lose my job. I won't have to, you know, all those things that I think are really important in terms of, like, humanizing what disability is and what it can look like.
Which I don't think people think about. Like, you don't think about it until it's either happening to you.
Right.
Or
you're around it. That's another one of Tova's sayings. She always says that, like, the way to inclusion is through education and osmosis. And, like, the reason she says that is, like, for a lot of people, like, the only way that people learn about disability is if they're taught about it in a way that they can understand, that is, like, inclusive and, like, trauma-informed. And then the other way is through either living that experience or being around somebody who's going through that experience. Because then you see, like you said with your friend, you see how inaccessible things can be for them. And you think, wow, I hope there's some different things that are like available for me if that ever happens to me. Like, I hope it becomes more accessible. So I think that's really interesting. But to get back to the labels that, like, you know, we accept, I think, you know, with disability in terms of a sense of community, it's growing. Like, I think people are becoming more, I think especially with mental health, I think people with mental health, people are becoming more open-minded to that idea that it's okay to talk about anxiety and depression and any mental health issues that you're going through. People are more open to hearing those things in some regard. But yeah, it's still challenging to convince people that like your existence is different from theirs sometimes, right? If it doesn't look different to them. So for me, I'm constantly like trying to explain to people why I'm not good at things that other people are easily good at, and that it's not just about wanting it more.
Yeah,
I couldn't want to be good at those things more, like more than anybody.
So
I want to be able to be good at chores and cleaning. I want so badly to want to be able to do those things. I just can't.
Mm-hmm.
And being okay with that. And like, I saw a TikTok the other day that was like, I do not need to have a clean house in order to receive love. Because I will like beat myself up over something so stupid. And then I'm getting mad at myself again, back into that cyclical sort of like angst. Like, that's what my anxiety is. My anxiety is very internal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, yes, the outside world does affect my anxiety in some ways, but it's more that I obsess over things, and that obsession, I just can't get out of the loop.
Mm-hmm.
And I get stuck in that loop, and I can't get out, and I'm getting a lot better at being like, Rory, come here. And I just need to say these things to you, because saying them, I'll hear how stupid they are, mm-hmm. and then I'll go, that's nothing.
Yeah.
I can handle that in my sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll be okay. But for him, it's he doesn't have anxiety at all, so he's the kind of person that like really doesn't is like, it. I don't understand how your brain works, so you really need to explain it to me.
But that constant need of like I mean, one thing with your partner, but like I really felt it lately, like a constant need of like having to explain to people of like I've been going through like an anxious bit because I got a lot going on and live with a lot of humans and my house is a disaster and all of these
and
things.
We're in a global pandemic.
And, you know, emailing a prof to be like, huh, hey, I'm struggling. And they're like, everybody is. And you know, everyone's stressed during this time and you really need to buckle down. And I'm like, I don't want to give you a long talk about my mental health.
Right.
For you to be like, but I also don't know how to explain to you is that like, I'm not just stressed out. Like, I'm in a ball on my floor crying because my room's too messy, but I also can't get up without feeling like puking because my room's too messy.
Yeah.
And therefore, I didn't do the assignment on time. Like, that isn't a thing I want to tell you over an email.
Yeah.
So it's like that constant explaining of like, no. Like, I'm not just like, oh no, a little bit of stress, blah, 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 blah. It's like, but it's one of those things that you constantly have to
validate
and explain and be like, here, let me tell you all of my traumas so you actually believe me.
And then people are like annoyed that you just told them all of your trauma. It's like, well, okay, but you weren't taking me seriously unless I did. I didn't want to have to tell you all this.
Yeah, I would much rather to just say, hey,
I am struggling.
I need an accommodation.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the other one I get all the time is people being like, well, you should have like labeled that from the start. And I'm like, I don't want to be like, hello, I am the anxious little bean. I will need accessibility. Here's all the things that I will exactly need from like the very beginning of the course.
How do you know what you're going to need?
How do I know what I'm going to need? Yeah. Also, you're a stranger. I've never met you. You're on Zoom. You could be an asshole. Like, I don't want to do that to myself.
They are.
Yeah.
And like, I'm reaching out to you over email. I'm desperate. Like, I wouldn't be doing this otherwise.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it seems I find education, like, specifically really challenging in terms of, I think the way our education system is built now, it makes us sick, especially, mm-hmm. like, post-secondary education. It makes you sick. Mm-hmm. So there are people who are well, who go to school, who end up sick. And for those of us that are sick, and I don't like using that word, but, like, you know what I mean, that are mentally ill before they go to school, it just adds to it. You add one little tiny disruption into the life of a person with mental illness at university, they're done. Like, they're out of there.
Yeah.
And there's not enough people within the institution that believe people with mental health.
Unless you get the right paperwork. And to get the right paperwork can be very expensive, especially as, like, an adult. And so it's one of those, even in workplaces, too, like, to just, like, unless you're, like, walking in there with, like, some sort of, like, physical thing that they can see, and you'd be like, yo, this is a thing that I need, and I don't know how to explain that I need it. Like, wellness days are not something that exist enough in workplaces at all. And people are just like, you need to get your life together. You need to be a real adult. Like, that's... And the whole,
adulting's,
like,
hard.
Right? Adulting's hard. There's no safety net in being a real adult. I'm like, have you ever wondered why? Like, why there is no thing to, like, make sure we can exist as normal humans and, like, not turn into little balls of misery in the real world? Can we like, make that a thing?
Normalize that just a little bit more. I think for, in terms of, like, accepting a label, I think it's really challenging to accept that label because it comes with so much stigma, right? Because, you know, saying that you have a disability, immediately the next question after that is, what is it? Right? And I think you hit the nail on the head. Lots of trauma, like PTSD, comes from, like, it's just like you don't want to be, like, going over your entire medical chart of, these are all the things that have happened to me that have led me here. You know, you don't want to give, you know, I don't even know what a lot of my triggers are a lot of the time. So, like, for me to say to an employer or to a prof or, you know, to a friend, to my husband, what is it that is, like, what do you need? I don't know half the time, right? Like, I don't know what is going to set me off in a way that is unmanageable for me in that time. And that it can be multiple things happening all around my life, right? Like, when I was in my first year or my last year of university, I was doing my honors project, which I was teaching at a high school. And my mom got diagnosed then. And it was one of those things where it was really weird. It was like, what's wrong with you, Mom? What's happening to you? Why are you so sick? And, you know, this might touch again a little bit on, like, doctors not believing women when they're unwell. But every doctor she saw was like, it's menopause. It's menopause. That's what it is. And finally, she, like, got to a point where she was so sick, she was going to the emergency room. And they finally, some nurse was like, we have an opening in the CAT scan ward or whatever that is. Why don't we do a scan on her? When they did a scan, they realized that she had ovarian cancer and that it had spread throughout all of her organs, and basically came to us with the sort of idea, like, you guys should celebrate Christmas early. And I was like,
I know, I can't make it not make more.
Right during my very traumatic story, Emma. Can't. What are you trying to do?
It's gonna die.
Okay.
Well, we don't have much time anyway.
We're almost done.
So.
We're running out of time. But anyway, your video will just cut out, and that's okay. We'll just say technical difficulties.
Goodbye, Emma.
But yeah, so my mom was sort of diagnosed, and it was sort of like instantly scary. Like, it was like, whoa. And at the time, I would have been like 21, my mom would have been 45. So it was like, what the frick? Like, my mom's not supposed to be, like, dying at this age. And I'm not supposed to have to deal with this right now. I'm supposed to be, like, in my 40s or my 50s. I shouldn't be doing this right now. This is crazy. But in my head, I was like, I can't let anybody know this is happening to me because then they'll think that I can't do this. And then I'll have to leave school. And then, like, I have to get all my work done and continue this, like, A average. Like, I can't let this all go now. And I was just so obsessed with this idea of, like, I'm not going to use this as an excuse like other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, that is, I think, something that's ingrained in me from my mom. But I was like, I'm not going to use this as an excuse. I'm going to overcome this. Cut to 3 weeks into, like, this whole thing. My mom was going to Chicago to see if she... Like, we really were like, she's dead. Like, she's dying. She went to Chicago to see if she could get, like, an experimental surgery kind of thing. And she was gone. And it was the first time she wasn't at home. And I literally went into such a depressive state that I didn't move. I just laid down on the couch and was like, I'm done. And my brother was like, help,
help,
help, help, help. This is weird. She never done that before. That looks bad. Somebody help us. And my aunt thankfully came and was like, we're going to find you some resources so that you can talk to somebody. And I just was going to Dow at the time. So they had therapy at Dow. So I started seeing a therapist, an emergency therapist. I was like, help. And I went to go talk to them. And it was so hard for me to overcome this idea that I didn't want to use what was happening to me as a crutch. But it's like, we, you know, I think there's like a lot of stigma when you identify as having a disability, when you accept that label. I think a lot of people think you're using it as a way to get out of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you don't want to be an adult. That's why you're saying that you have this.
I do it in my own head of being like,
I still have stigma within myself, and it's reconciling that stigma within myself. It's really hard. It's a lot of work because I will always, you know, oh, I'm imposter syndrome. Oh, I don't deserve to be here. Someone has it worse than me. This isn't that hard. I'm just stupid.
If I just pushed myself a little bit harder, if I have a mental breakdown? As long as I get this assignment done on time.
Yeah. As long as everyone around me is happy, who cares what I actually feel like? I can keep going. I'm the Energizer Bunny. Like, that's what everybody says about me. I never quit. I never stop until I do. And that's a big thing for me is, like, I kind of lead with positivity. You know, people always describe me as being fun. And, you know, that's because that's the side of me that I let people see. Mm-hmm. And then I go home and I'm not that person because I need to take a break from that person because mm-hmm. being that person is exhausting. And then I'm this kind of moody and dark kind of person. And not everybody likes that version of me. So who I show that to is, like, very limited.
It's like, well, like, I like learning about what masking was also really interesting to me. And I know folks with autism talk about it a lot, but I also kind of was like, I get that. Like, I do that in a way in, like, learning how to exist in the world without everyone around you knowing that I'm an anxious mess. Mm-hmm. So I'll be feeling like I'm going to puke and I'm super stressed out and, like, the littlest thing makes me want to commit manslaughter. but, you know, I'm like, oh, no, everything's fine. I'm doing great. And, like, I'm not great at it because everyone's like, no, dude, you look like you're about to blow. But, like, that constant need to, like, perform this okayness when you're not, just to, like, protect everyone around you like going through situations of, like, I don't know how to do this situation not freaking out, but I know how to pretend like I'm not freaking out so that not everyone else around me is like, oh dear God, because, like, if I actually acted how I felt inside, people would be like, this woman needs, like, 8 Ativans and to not be here because she's stressing me out.
Hard to work with.
I'm really fascinated about masking as well because I, as well, have a similar sort of, like, I joke around with my friends. They call it my light.
Mm-hmm.
So they say that I have this, like, internal light that I have to be very careful about where I let it shine because people are, gravitate towards it. And it's too much. It's, like, this, like, overwhelming people, and I attract the weirdest people. Like, when I'm standing at a bus stop, like, the weirdest people are talking to me.
Yeah.
people just come to me, and I have to try really hard to hide that person, because it is like, you know, too much is like, you guys have your branding activity. Mm-hmm. My brand would be too much, in mm-hmm. quotes. That's what I would have on my shirt. Too much.
I love it.
Because that's what people say about me all the time. Oh, she's too much. She's just overwhelming. She's too much. She's too loud. She's too talkative. She's too energetic. Can't keep up with her. That's like how people talk about me. And it can be like really difficult to sort of feel like you're overwhelming people, mm-hmm. especially yeah. when you have the need to be liked by them. Mm-hmm. So I'll change my personality in order to feel like I'm more someone's vibe
mm-hmm.
because I like them and I want them to like me. So I'm like trying to make everybody super comfortable. And I was reading something the other day about managing other people's emotions is like impossible. Like mm-hmm. I can't control the way you feel. You're going to feel the way you feel because that's your business.
Mm-hmm.
But like for me, I feel like I need to make sure that you're happy. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try to be silly. And if that doesn't work, then I'm going to try to feed you. And if that doesn't work, then I'm going to buy you shiny things. I'm like that person in that song that's like 12 turtle doves or like whatever. I'm like that person like, I will give you whatever you want in trying to please you for you to give me just a little ounce of thanks. But I can't do that. It's exhausting. And then I'm also not focusing on my own emotions mm-hmm. because I'm trying to please you. So I'm doing things that I don't like doing, or I'm doing things that I don't feel good about in order to, because you like them.
Mm-hmm. You're drinking you like beer them. And eating hot peppers,
peppers
on
pizza. Because I want to make someone happy.
Exactly.
And then I kind of lose myself. I get into these like disassociative states where I realize like, who is she? But not in a good way. Like, not yeah. who is she? It like literally, who is she? And now I'm 29, almost 30. I just got diagnosed with ADHD, despite knowing that I had it my whole childhood and sort of feeling like either I did or I didn't. I don't know. I always felt like I knew that I had it. And then I would convince myself I didn't have it, because if I really did have it, somebody would have been like, someone help this girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole like, oh, yes, it can't be real. I don't have a piece of paper from a doctor telling mm-hmm. me it is real.
And I just went in, not that I got a piece of paper, I had a prescription, I guess, which I guess is like a piece of paper. But it was just that confirmation of like someone believing me mm-hmm. who has medical knowledge inside their noodle. Saying, yes, I agree with you. And I was like shocked. And at first they didn't believe me. At first they used all the things that people say. Well, you did really well in school. You're doing well at your job. You know, typically with people with ADHD, we see how disruptive it is in all aspects of their life. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I've gotten very good at managing these things, mm-hmm. mostly because I was forced to learn to manage those skills throughout my life. But now I'm at a point in my life where those coping mechanisms and those strategies that I've built around, you know, they're crumbling
because
they don't last.
Help. Oh, they're crumbling. Yeah, yeah.
And so I need more than just ideas in my head mm-hmm. or like mantras to like mm-hmm. keep me focused or to make me happy. And like the other thing that I noticed as well, so I've recently started taking medication. I forgot to take it today, but anyway, this is not part of the thing. But I recently started taking medication, and through taking that medication, I had an epiphany. I was always scared to take medication because I was worried that I wouldn't be myself.
Mm.
But then I realized that I don't need to be myself at work.
Mm-hmm.
And most people aren't themselves at work. Same thing with school, right? I don't need to go in and be like, bah, 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 like hitting people with jokes, like, da-da-da-da-da-da. Nobody needs that.
Yeah.
Not even me. Nobody needs that. And it was like literally an epiphany where I'm like at my desk on my medication, getting so much work done.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there was like a new voice in my head being like, that's not important. You don't need to go show Eartha this new dance that you learned.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to. She's on the phone. You don't need to go bug her. But actually, she did come into my office the other day and say, I miss you. Because I'm not coming out of my office as much. Because I'm so focused.
Oh.
But it really was a huge epiphany for me. I was telling my doctor about it. Like, you know, I don't need to be myself at work I can be myself at home, you know, when my medication wears off and I can be silly and goofy with my friends. That's how most people live their life, right? Mm-hmm. And that was such a relief for me. Mm-hmm. This like idea that I don't have to, that it's okay if I'm a little bit like more subdued.
Yeah.
People aren't going to dislike me. People are probably going to like me a hell of a lot more because I'm getting way more stuff done. Mm-hmm. I made this document that we're working on. Mm-hmm. That's medication in the works So that was pretty impressive. That's how we're going to end this podcast.
This podcast is brought to you amazing. By Kelsey's super great ADHD medication.
Thank you. Yeah, so we're going to wrap this episode up. We'll be back again recording new episodes. We're going to try to release them on a semi-regular schedule, but we all have cool lives that we lead, so who knows? Hopefully our next podcast, we have a guest.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
That would be super dope. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Yeah. Bye.
Okay, I gotta let you go. I have to get my Lake Magog vaccine.
Your Lake Magog vaccine?
Yeah, you know, I'm really looking forward to having the whole family to the cottage for my annual cookout.
Smart move. I'm gonna ask for the Montreal vaccine. I miss those last-minute get-togethers with my buddies.
Nice. Well, I gotta run. I don't think it protects against lateness.
Each vaccination brings us closer to these moments. Follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID vaccine. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Thank you. There is this thing. Do you realize
what is?
There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CKUT 90.3 FM. You were just listening to Slow Mo by The Beaches. And that completes this episode of The Avalanche, a special edition of Off the Hour, airing every Wednesday from 5 to 6. To stay up to date with Avalanche news, check out our Twitter, at AvalancheCKUT. Thank yous are due to all those who make educational and inspirational radio here at CKUT possible. If you would like more information on anything you heard tonight, or would like to participate and support news produced by and for the Montreal community, contact The Avalanche at avalancheckut.ca or CKUT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news at ckut.ca. Stay tuned for Jose, that's up next.
Pop Montreal International Music Festival is celebrating its 20th anniversary from September 22nd to 26th, 2021. 5 days of music, films, art, crafts, panels, and more, featuring Cakes Tequila, Backwash, The Besnard Lakes, The Deers, Handsome Eli, and more. Tickets on sale now at popmontreal.com.
Disturb your easy tranquility. 416-416, get in the mix, stir the batter, constant chatter on CKUT 90.3 FM. Did I miss something?
Narrow of mind when you're young at heart.